Thank you. You may please be seated. Okay, the first case on this afternoon's docket is Colorado Medical Society versus Governor Hickenlooper, and also the Colorado Association of Nurse Ineffectiveness. I have to give the appearance, please.
Good afternoon, Your Honor. I'm Joseph Forecast,
Okay, very good. Thank you. Counsel?
Good afternoon, Your Honors. First Assistant Attorney General Leanne Morrill on behalf of Governor John Hickenlooper. With me today at Council's table is Frederick Miles on behalf of interviewer defendant the Colorado Association of Nurse Anesthetists, and Bennett Cohen on behalf of the Colorado Hospital Association, also an interviewer defendant.
All right, thank you. Counsel, this is a case which has been set for 1 hour. It means each side has a half an hour. You'll have to keep track of your own time, if you will, please. So, whenever you're ready, Mr. Wonski.
Members of the court, I should first also mention that Kristen Woodard, in the pink, the past president of the Colorado Society of Anesthesiologists, is here, as well as Susan Coombs, who's the general counsel for the Colorado Medical Society.
All right, thank you.
I will be presenting the argument on behalf of both petitioners. This case, of course, started on September the 29th.
Justice Marquez is not going to be participating in this case. I'm sorry, I'll give you another 30 seconds.
Governor Ritter determined back in September of 2010 that as a matter of Colorado law, a physician conducting surgery in Colorado did not have the right or the duty to supervise a certified nurse, registered nurse anesthetist who is delivering anesthesia services. Now, he did restrict the scope of his determination to the 29 critical access hospitals in Colorado, as well as 14 general hospitals that are located in smaller cities. However, my client and Mr. Conlon's client were concerned about the effect of the decision, and that's why we filed for declaratory judgment to determine whether or not the governor's determination was consistent with Colorado law. I'd like to do two things today. First, I'd like to tell you a little bit about what this case is about and what it is not about, and then go into the statutory interpretation arguments or concerns that your grand certiorari highlighted. Let's start with what this case is not about. It is not about a turf battle. It's not about the ability or the desire to affect the quality of care in rural areas. It deals with the issue of supervision, and that is whether the surgeon who is conducting a medical operation, who is already out there, who lives in the rural community, has the right and the power to supervise a CRNA who is delivering anesthesia services out there. So this case is not about replacing anybody. It's not about bringing anybody in. And as far as we can tell, it does not affect the costs involved.
That's an interesting way you phrase that, the right and the power.
Yes.
I actually thought the issue was whether the nurse could provide it without supervision.
Yes, actually, so, it's the right and the power.
Are you citing a statute that gives an absolute right and power to this?
No, it's the statute imposes the duty of the physician to supervise the delivery of anesthesia care, and conversely, it would also impose the duty upon the nurse anesthetist to follow that direction.
And not to do it unless the supervision was there.
Yes. I'm sorry about that.
Right, okay.
There's a lot in the amicus briefs about the interior effects here, or whether anesthesiologists are trying to steal the show. But really, it's a simple issue about the idea of supervision. That being said, let's talk a little bit about what this case is all about. And that is, it's about the issue of supervision. I think it's important for this court to understand, and the record does bear this out, that supervision and anesthesia services are a complex issue, and that a either an anesthesiologist or CRNA must do multiple things during a surgical operation, some of which are very unique to anesthesia, some of which are not. The duties include the determination as to what anesthesia agent will be used. It will involve the examination of the patient to determine whether he or she is capable of enduring the anesthesia. It will involve the administration of anesthesia during the operation. It will be various tests, the pulse, electrocardiogram, the carbon dioxide level in the bloodstream. It will involve the administration of intravenous fluids. It will involve participation in the emergency if it develops during a surgical procedure. It will involve post-operative care. The surgeon, of course, will be conversant with a lot of those duties, but not all of them. But still, the point is that the surgeon should have the right to supervise. Supervision will come up in many ways. First of all, is the anesthesia provider capable and experienced in the procedure? Has the anesthesiologist or CRNA undergone a similar type of operation like this before? What sort of tests should be administered during the operation? What are the results of those tests? What do they indicate? What sort of intravenous fluids should be administered? What sort of care should be given to the patient after the surgery and the surgical procedure? Those are things that we submit to you that a physician has the right and the duty under Colorado law to supervise. There's a second aspect of supervision that is compelling in this case, and that is we're dealing with the Medicaid standards. And the Medicaid standards already, despite the fact that the governor has opted out, they do involve a specter of physician supervision. For example, with hospitals, and this is 42 CFR 482.52, the federal government has required that anesthesia services must be provided in a well-organized manner under the direction of a qualified doctor of medicine or osteopath. The service is responsible for alloanesthesia administered in the hospital. So the conundrum here is that even though the overall supervision must be in the hands of a physician, that somehow when you get to the level of the delivery, that the physician supervision element is gone. The same thing is true with critical access hospitals, and that is 42 CFR 485.639, where there the surgeon or the practitioner conducting the surgery is required to examine the patient immediately before surgery to evaluate the risk of the procedure to be performed. Now, of course, the procedure would include anesthesia. And I think under Colorado law, as the governor saw, that even though the examination would be done, the physician would have no right to make sure that the procedure was carried out in accordance with the risk assessment that the doctor made. So there's a lot of moving parts here. And the question is, what do you do? And what I submit to you is that you look to the way that the state legislature resolved the problem. And you look to the issues of statutory construction that you highlighted with your grant of certiorari. I think the trial court, and I think the Court of Appeals, saw three statutory concepts that were out there. And both courts had to deal with reconciling. The first was the definition of medical plan and delegated medical functions. And that is a definition that is in Section 103, Sub 4 of the Nurse Practice Act. And that is essentially the concept of a medical plan and the idea that if a surgeon is going to have a medical plan for operating on a person, that the surgeon has the duty to supervise it. And all people who are performing functions that are a part of that plan must be under the physician's supervision. That's the first concept. And I tell you that even though the word delegated medical function appear here and there in the medical statutes of the state, that's the only place where the concept is defined. The second concept that was out there and that the Court of Appeals and the trial court seized upon was the requirement that a certified registered nurse anesthetist have a system in place for collaboration and consultation with a Medicaid provider, and also have the ability to refer a case out if in fact that was warranted. Now, the courts below said that that was an all-encompassing statute which overrode the definition of medical plan. The third concept which was out there was the idea and the statutory expectation that an advanced practice nurse would perform both delegated medical functions and independent nursing functions. The idea or the concept of independent nursing functions is not defined anywhere within the Act. But the legislature, as I said before, did define what a delegated medical function is. Now, the Court of Appeals and the trial court said, well, you know, if we interpret the definitions of medical plan and delegated medical functions according to what they appear to say, that just wouldn't work. And so therefore, we're going to say that they're just way too broad. We're going to ignore them, and we're going to look at the idea of collaboration and consultation and say that's what the nurses should do. Well, that brings us to the issue which brings us all here, and that is, how does one interpret a statutory scheme? And I would suggest to you that three methods are really the most helpful in this court. The first method is one that I think you enunciated every single one of your statutory interpretation opinions. And that is, what you try to do is you take the statute as a whole and you try to give every single element of the statute force and effect. And that's really something which can be done very easily in this case. Let me try to do so in very crude, layperson terms. Let's suppose you have a surgeon calling out a CRNA. And let's suppose it's in either Steamboat Springs or Vail or Durango, where you have a rural hospital. The phone call is, boy, somebody was out there on a ski slope, and that guy really messed up his leg. And it's going to take at least 6 hours of surgery to put his leg back together again. And I want you to be at the operating room tomorrow and help me out, because this is going to be a big ordeal. The CRNA hangs up the phone and says to himself, wow, I got to put a guy out for 6 hours. I've never done that before. At that point, he has two options. One is to refer the case to an anesthesiologist at the hospital where he's practicing. Or he can call up and collaborate and consult according to the procedure that's set out in nurse practice. And he can get some information as to what sort of agent to use, what sort of complications might arise during the surgery, what sort of testing should be done during the surgery, and armed with that collaboration and consultation, he can show up the next day for the surgery. Now, the surgeon then says to the CRNA, okay, we've got a really tough one here. This guy's got a few complications. He's got a weak heart, so there may be something going on with his heart. I want you to keep an eye on the electrocardiogram. I want you also to look out for the intravenous fluids, because this is a long operation. If the results of the electrocardiogram are above a certain level, I want you to tell me. And, you know, something might go wrong with the heart during this operation. If that's the case, I'm going to tell you to do this. I'm going to tell you to do that, and we're going to pull this guy through. Oh, by the way, he's a big contributor to the hospital, and if we really take care of him afterwards, he may grab us a big check as a donation. Now, all of that is supervision. And so you can have the consultation by the day before the surgery. You can have the supervision. And that is a very consistent way of looking at the statute. Now, the Court of Appeals said, huh, you just can't interpret these two statutes together. You got to read out of existence the medical plan. That just doesn't work. We did suggest that was the way of reading the statute in our briefs, and we said to the respondents, hey, what's wrong with this way of reading the statute? Frankly, we have not yet gotten an answer. So that is the first way that this court ought to look at this case, and you can do that just looking at the statute. Your work is done.
Before you move on, let me ask you then, how is that inconsistent? Just hook that back up with essentially what the governor did here. How is that how's your reading inconsistent with the governor's position?
Well, the governor just said, I'm opting out, and Colorado law does not require supervision. And so he did not enunciate any reasons for that. When we filed our case, the clash between those two statutes was relied upon by the response.
Okay, well then, help me understand that if the governor's position is that supervision isn't always required, is your position that supervision is always required?
No. For one thing, this is a very limited case. It has to do with the actions of a CRNA during surgery. We're not talking about the other aspects of their practice, since that's not really before the court. And then I think it's possible to say, though, that this is perhaps the most supervision-intense activity that a CRNA would perform. And if they're acting independently after, they probably never perform any delegated medical functions, just because their practice does not get more complicated than the way that what we're talking about today. Does that answer your question?
I guess so. I guess I'm just trying to determine, when do you think supervision is required?
I think the governor would say, Bill, Governor Hickenlooper, and the respondents would say that a CRNA acts independently all the time. It's never subject to supervision.
And so when do you think supervision is required?
Anytime there's a medical plan. In other words, when a doctor says, I want to make this person better, and this is how it should be done, anybody who is doing the done will be subject to supervision.
Okay.
Now, I'm not actually getting how, and it really helped me if you look at the Nurse Practice Act and then look at the opt-out provision of the federal regulations that allow these underserved communities to be served. I mean, would you take a look at the statutes and make your argument from that? Certainly would help, I think. I mean, this kind of independent nursing activity is authorized under the Nurse Practice Act, isn't it?
It is, if provided it is not a delegated medical function. And I want to get back once again, that we're not dealing with rural areas. And
well, here's my concern. The medical board, which supervises this profession, agrees with this construction and with the governor's service to these rural communities to have Medicare payments still eligible and use this act. So I think you have a burden here to show us why that isn't contemplated by the legislation, why the governor was in error.
Well, and that's
I'm not hearing it yet.
That's what I'd like to talk about next,
right.
Because I think you would agree with me that a administrative determination has less value if it's directly contradicted by the statute.
Well, that's what I'm looking for. Where is it directly contradicted?
Well, let's talk about that.
Before you totally move on, could I just follow up a second on Justice Ide's question?
Yes.
I believe. And that is, you said you understand the governor's opt-out as standing for the proposition that nurses never need to be supervised with regard to this practice, this anesthesiology. I wonder if you could, I won't ask you to point me to exact words, but what is there about his order that makes you feel that they never have to be supervised rather than simply they could operate without being supervised? And let me follow up on that, because I think it's the basis of the whole argument here, or why we're in court, and that is, do you think that the governor's opt-out to the federal government with regard to federal funding establishes law in Colorado, establishes rights and duties?
Let me answer the final question first. It definitely does, because essentially what he's saying is that the critical access hospitals and the rural hospitals, the 14, do not have to comply with Colorado law in order to get Medicaid funding. They don't have to supervise their CRNAs.
And is he in a position to make that determination? I mean, why would one take his indication of his understanding of Colorado law to the feds for purposes of federal funding to establish what the Colorado law is?
I smile a little bit when you start to ask that question. It's because the federal government says that's the way it's done. In other words, the CMS adopted regulations in the federal register, and they said, look, the governor certifies that no supervision is required by state law, that's good enough, and we'll start paying for procedures that did not involve supervision.
We'll start paying, but does that suggest anything about any other mechanism within the state, including tort suit, whatever, to establish what the full obligations of the nurses are and the doctors? And I take it, I'm not asking that just to be technical. It seems to me that's the kind of fundamental basis of the standing argument, is it not?
Yes, it is. But you make the tort suits, for example, and if you read the briefs of the respondents, they're saying captain of the ship is gone because of the fact that there is no longer any need for or any requirement or resistance of physician supervision. And so that, would, I think, would presumably affect horses, and somebody else would case it for you.
So that's what they think. Okay.
That's correct. And it's not part of the record, but people have, my client has seen situations where people have come to say they go to the hospital and said, this is what the courts have said, we're invented. So, and that's why we filed this in the first place. I'm sorry, I forgot.
No, that's fine. But take the more specific part at the tail end of Justice Ide's question. What is there about his opt-out provision that makes you understand it to be that nurses never have to be supervised with regard to this activity, rather than simply that they can act independently?
Well,
does that depend on the setting?
You're right, and I may be, my answer might be working with this, and tell me. Essentially, the opt-out decision was a hospital does not have to call for supervision of a CRNA by a doctor. Now, certainly a hospital can say, our standards are a lot different than that, we're going to require a lot more, and then that's perfectly right.
So in that sense, then it sounds to me like what you're saying is, when you said included power in that to supervise, are you agreeing that the governor's order, even the way it's phrased, would not take away the power for physicians to supervise?
Yeah, no, I would disagree with that, because the governor's certification is that there is no requirement of physician supervision under federal law. There's no requirement, there's no power to supervise.
And does that mean that hospitals or doctors in particular situations couldn't create that power by the way they set up the regulatory process?
The source would be other than Colorado statutes, the way the response would be.
Okay.
Let's talk a little bit about legislative history. And
you know, I don't want to talk about legislative history quite yet.
Okay.
I'm hoping you'll look to the statute and just help me understand where first in the language you're reading comes from. And I guess I'll just direct you to the first provision, the 1238.1034 that you mentioned. How do you interpret the medical function and how it applies here?
Well, basically, I'll try to simplify quite a bit. I may miss something. The delegated medical function is part of, it's either implementing or consistent with the medical plan of the doctor.
Okay, so whenever there's a medical plan of the doctor,
yes.
All right, then the anesthesiology becomes, it has to be supervised. That's how you're
doing. That's correct. And then the actual supervision point is in 103 sub 12, when they talk about that delegated medical functions are performed under the supervision of the physician.
Okay. So help me understand then, when under your reading, would there not be a medical plan? How do you envision the independent?
I gave you one example in my brief, and once again, it's not before this court, but let's suppose you have a certified nurse midwife. She's delivering, she calls the CRNA up and says, this might be complicated. That's not a doctor with a medical plan. But
any time a doctor is devising a plan, that is when supervision is required.
Correct. It's the doctor devising the plan that creates the supervision network.
Okay, and then so then you read the collaboration language is you can still be collaborating while you're being supervised?
Yes.
Okay.
And the reason is this, the surgeon will do the supervision, and he's perhaps the captain of the ship. But the CRNA may need a little bit more horsepower from another anesthesiologist. Somebody who's been around for 50 years and seen this procedure thousands of times. That's where the collaboration comes from.
Okay, thank you.
This legislative history is important, and I think three aspects of it are important. First of all, the enactment in 1980. 1980 was the first time that APNs, or advanced practice nurses, and the CRNA is one of the four kinds, that was recognized by the Act. But yet at the same time, the legislature said that APNs are classified as professional nurses, and professional nurses will perform delegated medical functions. So by recognizing the APN and at the same time saying that they would be subject to physician supervision and performance of delegated medical functions, the legislature created the paradigm, which has been in place ever since then. The second legislative pronouncement, which is important, is the 2008 enactment, which created the requirement of a plan for consultation and collaboration. That, remember, is the statute that the Court of Appeals relies so heavily upon. The legislative history there said, well, we, the General Assembly, do not have any intent to expand the scope of practice of APN. We are allowing them to do things that they are already allowed to do under the scope of practice, but in doing that, they should have the ability to consult with another medical practitioner. Now, there is that legislative history against the contention by the respondents that that pronunciation somehow created an entirely independent scope of practice. And finally, the last thing that's important is the 2009 reenactment of the Nurse Practice Act. A brief talk about that. There was a proposal to the legislature that is almost identical to the position taken by the respondents. Number one, a CRNA or any APN would have the ability to consult or collaborate with somebody. Number two, they would act independently. And the legislature said, no, they're not going to act independently, and that proposal was seized. So basically what the legislature is saying is that the position that you see from the respondents today was not an important position. So that's the second thing. The third thing, which I think is important, is the way that the legislature has addressed this subject in different statutes. And I think it's a rule of statutory construction that when you have two statutes that address the same subject matter, the intent of the legislature in one of the statutes is a good indication of what their intent is on the other. And the statute that's involved here is the statute dealing with the anesthesiology assistance that was adopted in 2012. Now, I'll admit one problem here, and that is the statute was adopted in 2012, the governor's opt-out was in 2010. And so I think you'll have to reconcile whether that means anything. But what the legislature did in section 12-36-1067 is to say that the delivery or provision of anesthesia services is a delegated medical task. I've used the word task instead of function. I don't see any difference. Now, there are a few other rules, and that is that implied repeal of one statute is not favored, and that, of course, is important, too. So, I think we have a lot of sympathy for the opt-out. I think Justice Hobbs mentioned before there was concern about the rural areas. But as a matter of fact, this case right now is not going to affect rural areas. It's simply going to affect the relationship of the people who are already there. And then that takes us to what is the General Assembly doing? What is their view? And that is spelled out in spades in both the language of the statute as well as the legislative history. And that's why we'd like the Court of Appeals to be reversed. Thank you.
Right, thank you very much. Ms. Long?
Thank you. May it please the Court. If all goes according to plan today, the last 10 minutes of our side's argument will be given to Fred Miles on behalf of the intervener defendants. I will be presenting argument for the governor. The Court of Appeals decision in this case characterized the governor's opt-out as a funding decision, which I think is an important sort of contextual point to remind the court of, which is namely that the federal statutory scheme through which the opt-out became an option is in fact a reimbursement scheme, and it's one that requires hospitals to impose a physician supervision requirement on the delivery of anesthesia care in order to be eligible to be reimbursed from Medicare. So it is correct for the Court of Appeals to say that this, the governor's opt-out was a funding decision to free up hospitals in their flexibility to make decisions about who could provide and deliver anesthesia without physician supervision while still being able to obtain the benefits of Medicare reimbursement. But on the other side of the coin is the requirement that the opt-out be in the best interests of the citizens of the state that is exercising the opt-out, which is another important point and for the context for this court that we don't want to lose sight of. In this case, Governor Ritter, and has not been changed by now Governor Hickenlooper, elected to opt out in the areas of this state in which critical care is often required for individuals who don't, at hospitals that don't have anesthesiologists on the staff, where a CRNA is the frontline plan for delivering anesthesia care for needed surgical procedures for those individuals. And so the governor's opt-out in this case was limited to those general hospitals, rural general hospitals, and critical access hospitals in rural areas. And that was an express determination on his behalf that opt-out for those hospitals was in the best interest of the citizens of the state of Colorado. And lining up with him on the side, that was in fact the best policy decision here, were both the boards of medicine and nursing, who, as this court knows, are traditionally tasked with interpreting the Medical Practice Act and Nurse Practice Act on a day-to-day basis. So in the middle of these decisions, the funding decision and the best interest decision, is the legal decision, which is the governor did have to perform a legal task. He had to make a determination as to whether opting out of the physician supervision requirement imposed by federal law was consistent with Colorado law. And again, we see the lining up of people on the side of the governor who made the determination that there is no physician supervision requirement in Colorado for CRNAs. We have, again, the boards of medicine and nursing, again, traditionally tasked with interpreting their own statutes and with regulating the licensees that appear before them. Each has agreed with the governor, and he exercised the opt-out in September of 2010. Since then, four legislative sessions have gone by, and we have not seen a physician supervision requirement inserted into the Nurse Practice Act for CRNAs. Nor have we seen the parade of horribles that the doctor suggests would ensue as a result of the opt-out.
So what provisions of what act or acts support that governor's position?
Absolutely, Your Honor. The first and most important provisions are the ones that specifically govern advanced practice nurses. CRNAs are one category of advanced practice nurse licensed by the state of Colorado. In order to attain that designation, a CRNA must gain qualifications through training and education and apply for and receive inclusion by the Board of Nursing on the Registry of Advanced Practice Nurses. In doing so, they are recognized under the Nurse Practice Act as having an advanced scope of practice that is broader than the practice of a professional nurse. It is accurate, though, to say that all advanced practice nurses are professional nurses. However, not all professional nurses are advanced practice nurses. And I do want to correct what I feel is a misunderstanding that the plaintiffs seem to have about the governor's position in this case. Our position is not that an advanced practice nurse, a CRNA specifically, will never have occasion to perform a delegated medical function. By definition of being a professional nurse, an advanced practice nurse will perform both independent nursing functions and delegated medical functions. The question in this case is whether the delivery of anesthesia by a CRNA who has gained that advanced practice nurse designation, who has gone through the specialized education, received the specialized training, has prepared and practiced to become capable of delivering anesthesia independently, is performing an independent nursing function or a delegated medical function. And that is what the governor contends is an independent nursing function in this case.
When would there ever be a medical whatever, a delegated medical situation in your view? Just help me understand that.
Involving a CRNA?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, help me understand. I understand you're disagreeing. You're saying, oh, there will be some instances where they do perform that, but help me understand what when that would be under your definition.
Absolutely. A prime example would be the instance of a surgeon who has a patient on the table, and say it's an abdominal surgery. And so a surgeon has made the incision, has exposed the abdominal cavity, and is about to look for a mass that is going to be removed. In the process, the surgeon observes that the abdominal cavity is filled with infection. He turns to the CRNA and says, please administer antibiotics through the main lines that you have set into the patient for the purpose of delivering anesthesia and other fluids necessary to keeping the patient under during the procedure. That is a prime example that not only would the doctor turn to the CRNA and give that instruction, but he or she may also select the type of antibiotic to be administered, the amount, and the frequency with any re-administration might occur.
Well, let's move back in time then, though. Take your opposing counsel's example. Oh my gosh, we have a surgery coming up. Let's talk about it. Is that not a delegated medical function then, because they're not right in the room together? Is that, I don't quite understand.
Was this the example of the leg break during the ski incident? Sure. The governor's contention is that if the call comes from, if the call is placed to a CRNA, the interaction between the CRNA and the physician who will be performing the surgery is not one of supervision and direction. It is one of consultation and collaboration pursuant to the express terms of the Nurse Practice Act, and that is something less than supervision and direction. And
that's not a medical plan when they call before the surgery?
I don't dispute that there is a medical plan for a surgical procedure. However, going to the statutory definition of medical plan, you will notice that it says that a delegated medical function may include the selection of medication. It doesn't say it must always include the selection of medication. So there will be independent nursing tasks that involve the selection of medication that do not fall within the definition of a delegated medical function. And in the case of the CRNA delivering anesthesia to a patient, that would be one such example where it is not a delegated medical function. Perhaps if a surgeon were directing a non-CRNA, say a near professional nurse or a practical nurse to deliver an anesthetic agent, that would be a delegated medical function because that nurse does not have the advanced practice, does not have the independent nursing judgment by virtue of her training and experiencing and licensure to make that determination.
Can I follow up on that?
Sure.
If you finish? I think my concern from listening to this is the circularity of the problem. And it seems that what you're trying to do right now is define according to the relationship of the people to each other, as opposed to any kind of a horizontal, if you will, relationship, as opposed to any sort of vertical direction kind of relationship. And what I am getting a little bit hung up on is the overall, overarching concept of a medical plan that somebody has to come up with. And to me, it seems that there always has to be a doctor who comes up with the overarching medical plan. And then the doctor says to various people, do things to help me carry this out. So is it your position then that if he says this to someone who is a advanced practice nurse, the relationship between them can never be a delegated medical function so long as it deals only with anesthesia, but if it deals with something else, then it won't be?
My position, I just want to make sure I'm clear.
It wasn't a wonderful question, but
I wouldn't say that.
Whoa. Thank you.
The governor's position is that when a CRNA is delivering anesthesia, that may be...
Maybe that's the best way to get to it. As long as it involves anesthesia, and they have the credentials to be able to do that, it doesn't matter anything else, really. They're doing anesthesia as advanced practice nurses.
Correct.
But if it's something else, infection,
yes,
then it likewise doesn't matter. Then they're just being nurses, not advanced practice nurses.
Well, it matters to the extent that when it's something other than anesthesia, it could be a delegated medical function.
Okay, and it almost always will be, because unless it deals with anesthesia, we're not really, at least for the purposes of this case, very interested, right?
Right. The concern expressed by the district court and the Court of Appeals and the governor is that if you side with the plaintiffs in this case, it has the effect of reading out the definition, unfortunately there isn't one, but the term independent nursing function.
Sure. So in essence, what we're really concerned about is what the medical team is talking about. And if they're talking about anesthesia, which your position, then it cannot almost by definition be a delegated medical function.
Correct, for a CRNA.
For a CRNA, am I understanding that correctly?
Yes, my position, the governor's position, is that a CRNA delivering anesthesia for which he or she has obtained specialized education and training is operating within the realm of independent nurse practice that for which he or she also has malpractice and insurance and liability insurance, and is not performing a delegated medical function, and that the consultation and collaboration requirement is less than a supervision requirement.
Sure.
You can tell somebody to consult with a legal advisor, with a tax advisor, and they are free to disregard the advice they receive. Similarly, collaboration suggests something even less. It means two professionals with vast bodies of knowledge coming together and putting their heads together to try to come up with a solution to a problem. But in no way does either word suggest supervision or direction. When I think of those words, I think I'm giving you an order. You don't follow it. There will be consequences.
Can I follow? Maybe I misunderstood your first example. I thought you started off by giving us a situation in which anesthesia was involved, but because it was an emergency or one that was not anticipated at the beginning of the surgery, that it would not be considered an independent function of the nurse, and rather would be considered under the supervision of the doctor as a delegated medical. Did I misunderstand that?
It's probably my fault, entirely my fault. So what I was trying to say was that the surgeon who's responsible for the surgery, the nurse anesthetist present, responsible for the delivery of anesthesia. Every task that the nurse performs to deliver anesthesia in that context is an independent nursing function. In the middle of the surgery, if the surgeon turns to the nurse, says, I see infection in the patient's abdominal cavity, push whatever amount of this specific antibiotic and readminister, according to this schedule. That's separate.
Because it's an antibiotic rather than anesthesia, is that right?
Correct.
All right, then basically you are sort of agreeing with the answer your opponent gave when I asked if that meant the doctors are limited by the governor's order from ever being able to have an advanced nurse with regard to anesthesia be subject to a delegated medical plan. You're agreeing they just can't do that.
That the
doctors can't place the advanced nurse in that kind of a supervisory position. If the nurse is dealing with anesthesia, you think the governor's order means they're always acting independently?
I think to put it more directly, I think the governor's order recognized that state law does not require physician supervision of nurse anesthetists when they're delivering anesthesia care. So his opt-out did not change law. It recognized what the legal relationships between the two parties are when a certain task is being performed.
And when you said does not require it, that's the one half of the question that I'm not disputing, but the question really is, does it permit it?
Absolutely. I think...
So the doctor can be place himself in a supervisory position with respect to an advanced nurse, even in delivering anesthesia?
No. That's not what I'm saying.
Okay.
And so I am saying it's an absolute...
So we really need to look at what the nurse is doing. And so long as what the nurse is doing is anesthesia, they cannot be supervised by a doctor about anesthesia. Is that correct?
A nurse anesthetist delivering anesthesia is performing an independent nursing function, not subject to physician supervision, but subject to a consultation and collaboration requirement.
Oh, can I just ask, just stop there, and let me ask you this. So are they barred, are physicians barred from supervising these nurses while they're administering anesthesia? Yes, correct?
Yes.
They are barred?
Yes. Okay. State law does not permit them to.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes. I mean, obviously they can collaborate and they can say, how's it going? And that makes sense. But you're saying that they can't supervise under state law.
Correct.
So that answers Justice Coates' other half. Go ahead.
And could I just follow up on that with the question then that I ask your opponent, and that is, so what is there about the governor's order that makes you think that?
The governor's task under the federal opt-out...
Well, actually, it wasn't an order. His opt-out.
Yes.
Yes.
The governor's task under the federal opt-out scheme requires him to consult with the boards of nursing and medicine and to determine whether opting out is consistent with those practice acts, as well as whether it's in the best interest of Colorado residents. And as part of that decision to opt out, he must make a legal conclusion, and he did.
But he had the concurrence of the two boards that regulate
these
persons. Now, can we get to that issue? What kind of review criteria, et cetera,
Can I ask one more question? And then,
sure.
I'm sorry. So what does the opting out really do then? Just says, this is the law?
It says that the state of Colorado does not require physicians to supervise CRNAs when administering anesthesia. As a result, a hospital who wants to obtain Medicare reimbursement may have a CRNA deliver anesthesia without physician supervision.
Go ahead. Who would normally, if there was a doctor, who normally would be supervising? Would it be a doctor who does anesthesia, or would it be the surgeon who would be supervising?
Is it an MD surgeon and an MD anesthesiologist?
Sure. I'm trying to figure out what's the difference. I guess what I'm saying is if there has to be supervision, who would do the supervising?
No, Your Honor, there does not have to be supervision. Supervision is required of nurses under the Nurse Practice Act if the nurse is performing a delegated medical function. In this case, when a CRNA is delivering anesthesia, he or she is performing an independent nursing function. The Nurse Practice Act does not require physician supervision for independent nursing functions. It requires consultation and collaboration. To answer the very thorny question of when an MD is doing the surgery and when an MD is administering anesthesia, the short answer is I don't know, and it's really beyond the facts of this case. I think a lot of that comes into tort liability. I would tend to put my money on the anesthesiologist, that MD, that he or she is acting independently and performing within their practice area.
All right, thank you.
But it's a difficult question.
Greg.
So, I want to know with respect to these two regulatory boards, mm-hmm. what their position is on the governor's interpretation of these acts. And are there criteria, was there a review process by both of these boards in agreeing that the governor was complying with state law in asking for this opt-out and reimbursement?
Absolutely. In both instances, the governor consulted with Board of Nursing and the Board of Medicine. My understanding is that the Board of Medicine voted 8-5 that the opt-out was consistent with state law. So a majority of the Board of Medicine voted that its practice act did not require physician supervision of nurse anesthetists. That same board, the medical board, also voted 7-6 that the opt-out was in the best interest of Colorado residents. The nursing board is a lot easier. They voted unanimously on both questions, that their practice act does not require physician supervision of CRNAs, and the opt-out would be in the best interest of Colorado citizens. The governor was informed by these decisions, by the primary bodies tasked with interpreting their own statutes, and he exercised the opt-out based directly on those decisions. I would like to see the rest of my time to counsel for the interveners. Thank you.
Certainly, thank you. Mr. Miles.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon. May it please the court. My name is Fred Miles. I'm here on behalf of the Colorado Association of Nurse Anesthetists. I too have difficulty with that word on occasion, so I refer to them as CRNAs, which is an easier designation. I would like to approach this argument from a little different standpoint, and I think Justice Hobbs was getting to that. And that's the word that needs to be applied in conjunction with this case, and that's the word deference. We're all sitting here trying to parse out this statute, trying to determine the meaning of the word medical plan. Is it synonymous with delegated medical function? It is not, if you read the statute. But really what we're trying to do is to determine whether or not, under what circumstances, these kinds of interrelationships work. And I would suggest to you that those are questions for the experts, not for us as lawyers, or else we'll just spend lots of time trying to parse out language. Now, there is precedent for courts reviewing opt-out decisions, and I would submit to you that you need to pay close attention to the recent 2012 California decision where that court sustained the opt-out. And what it did, it developed a very highly deferential review standard by saying, we're not going to change the governor's decision unless there was an abuse of discretion.
Counsel, can I just stop you there and just ask you, but what if, can you help me understand the effect of the governor's opt-out on Colorado law? I mean, essentially, that case is...
Frankly, I don't think there is any effect.
Yeah, I mean, I'm wondering... Yeah.
The way I would answer that question is the governor made a political decision. The whole matter by the federal government was entrusted to his discretion. He didn't even have to follow what the board said when you read those federal regulations. And the federal government did that knowingly. They said, we don't want to make this into a quasi-judicial process. We don't want to get involved in all kinds of litigation regarding this issue. There are two questions we want the governor to consider. One, is it consistent? Note the word consistent with state law. And two, is it in the best interest of the citizens of this state?
Well, and three, is his opinion.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, he's certifying.
Yeah, and I would submit probably if this were the California court and both boards said, no, don't do this, which they didn't do in that case, there might be an issue of abuse of discretion there. And the other thing that I think that Justice Hobbs wanted to get to is, okay, what about these agencies? These agencies are the ones charged by the state legislature, they're delegated, particularly the State Board of Nursing, to parse this stuff out and determine how it actually works in practice. And this court has recognized time and time again the deference to state agencies on technical matters of professional and substantive expertise. And let's take a look at the history of the opt-out in Colorado. First opt-out was considered in 2002. Both boards, at that time Governor Owen, both boards agreed with Governor Owen, said opt-out. A thing that hasn't been mentioned thus far, in 2003, the State Board of Health passed a general regulation for all state hospitals, saying in effect, anesthesia care in state hospitals may be delivered by an anesthesiologist or a CRNA independently. That's been the regulations in this state since 2003. Along comes the opt-out in 2010. Both boards are asked again. Both boards say yes, it's consistent with state law and it's in the best interest of the state of Colorado. And that's good enough for the feds. The governor doesn't even have to explain to the feds why he's done it. He doesn't necessarily have to follow the board's direction. I would submit to you that's where you need to rely on in terms of the expertise that's being applied.
But the decision the governor's really making is to be able to allow these hospitals to be able to get the reimbursement from federal funds.
Absolutely. It's a federal Medicare requirement unless we opt out. And what are we going to do? If this court should decide otherwise, we're going to roll back to 2010 and say that 29 critical care hospitals and 14, you've been doing it wrong for 4 years. Put their Medicare certification and their Medicare reimbursement at risk. I mean, you need to take a look at the relief that's being requested here in terms that the petitioners would have you imposing. Finally, let me say just one more thing. The reality of delivering healthcare is that healthcare providers oftentimes have functions that overlap with one another. That's why it's a collaborative affair. The reality here is that the delivery of anesthesia care in this state can be done by either a CRNA or it can be done by a physician. The practices overlap. And I just like to read you a short quote out of the California decision when it addressed that. It said, as nursing becomes more specialized, many nursing functions will inevitably overlap with physician functions. That does not mean, however, that those functions are not legitimately part of the practice of nursing. And it's been that way in this state for years. Actually, as a profession, CRNAs predate anesthesiologists. These were the nurses on the battlefields during the Civil War that were assisting the surgeons in doing surgical care at that point in time. So from that standpoint, I think you make a significant mistake. If you try to get into whether a medical plan is synonymous with a delegated medical function, what does the word supervision mean in this context? What does the word collaboration mean in this context? The fact of the matter is that it can mean all kinds of different things depending on the circumstances that the physician and the nurses confront. And that's the reason for having a course of care or a plan. Just because something's in a medical plan and the surgeon says, yes, we need to do that, that doesn't mean that that function can't be performed independently by a nurse. Now, if the nurse, for example, in the physician's view, does not have the requisite training, skills, etc., education, well then, the physician can take over and assume control and supervision. Keep in mind, the opt-out does not mandate anything as a matter of law. It does not say to a hospital, you need to allow these CRNAs to deliver care.
Except, counsel, I mean, doesn't the state take a position that the opt-out does bar supervision in this circumstance? I think that's the position we just heard her say.
I think it's a matter of statutory construction, that's what the state is saying. And what we're saying is that's always been the case as a matter of statutory construction, but the point is it's a fact and circumstance situation as to when you really get involved in delivering this kind of health.
But the standard you're urging is whether or not the governor abused his discretion in applying for and obtaining this opt-out.
Exactly.
So that the hospitals could be reimbursed.
Exactly. In that context, it doesn't mandate on a hospital out in Yuma, Colorado, that you've got to do this at all. It's a political decision. And I don't want to go through Baker versus Carr in terms of those factors, but there's at least a couple of them that apply. First of all, we've got a political decision here that was made in 2010. So there's a need to adhere to
it. Wouldn't it be better to call it a policy decision? I mean, yes. It is reviewable for abuse of discretion, isn't it?
I would absolutely agree.
Okay, and thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Your time is finished. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Mr. Bronski.
He added the third.
I have one major disagreement with Mr. Miles. He said, you know, we're just lawyers, and really we should let medical decisions be determined by the administrators. My rejoinder to that is, why not let them be made by the state legislature, which represents the people of the state of Colorado? And my quick counterpunch to that is, if you look at the Medical Practice Act, you find that this question is answered. Justice Hobbs asked Ms. Morrow, what is the statutory basis for the contention that CRNAs act independently when they're delivering anesthesia care? And I think she said two things. Number one, well, advanced practice nurses, including CRNAs, have an advanced scope of practice, and so they are a lot more skilled. And second, there is a collaboration requirement, and that doesn't include supervision at all. You know, the legislature took a look at those issues and answered them. And when you go back and you deliberate, take a look at 103.4, where there is the definition of delegated medical function and medical plan. And a medical plan includes the administration of medications, including anesthesia. Nothing in that statute regarding an exception for APNs. In fact, the legislature in 2009 added a definition of APNs, including CRNAs, to the Nurse Practice Act. And that appears in 103.815. And in that statute, in two places, the legislature said an APN performs delegated medical functions. So if Ms. Moore was right that an APN is suddenly acting independently, why does the state legislature disagree with it? So we're back to where we started. And that is, the legislature had a definition of medical plan delegated medical function. The legislature said that APNs, including CRNAs, will perform delegated medical functions. It went on to define what a delegated medical function is, which is anything that is consistent with or implements a medical plan. Well, anesthesia during surgery is consistent with and implements a medical plan. And that's why physician supervision is required. And that's why it's a matter of state law. And that's why the governor erred when he certified to the contrary. Finally, Mr. Miles says, oh, you know, if you get involved, of course, you're going to require that a whole lot of money to pay back to the federal government. That's not the case. What the federal regulations allow is the state to withdraw the opt-out to go back to the old days. And that's simply the process here. We're not taking any money out of any hospital's pocket. Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like to thank everyone who argued today. We appreciated your arguments very much.